Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two Orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to The Fighting Priests. This very special episode is going to be a two-parter. We are interviewing Captain Andrei Petrov, who is a captain in the U.S. Marine Corps, but is transitioning after 13 years of service to civilian life. And he is also a practitioner of jiu-jitsu, a first stripe purple belt, and is also studying to and getting preparing himself for ordination in the Orthodox Church. Because the interview was very, very long, we decided to split it into two separate episodes. So this is part one this week, and then in 2 weeks we will be airing part two of the same conversation. So without further ado, here is Andrei Petrov. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priests. My name is Father Ted Perestivopoulos, and I'm here, as usual, with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Calgary. Father Thomas, how's it going, man?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. You know, as this airs, I think we're going to be in Lent, right? Because we're going to be it'll probably be a week or two into Great Lent. So we're just as we're recording, we're on the cusp of we're just a few days, I think, away from the beginning of Great Lent. So it's super crazy for everybody, and I'm sure it's crazy for you.
Yeah, especially here, we got all this snow now. It's like on my deck, I think I have like a foot and a half of snow from the last 3 days.
Yeah, we don't know.
I went to jiu-jitsu last night. I was like, it's like minus 30. That's so much snow. I had a funeral yesterday, and I scraping off my car. I just sat there, like, and then I'm like, and my wife and my daughter left for Manitoba yesterday as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm alone. I'm like, I'm going to drive to this club, like, people better be there. This is Alberta. You can't not train just because of snow. So we did some no. Yeah, there was a small amount of people, but it's no gi. No, I find no gi in Alberta is not as popular as the gi, like most places in Canada.
That's okay.
Yeah,
I'm biased. Okay. Yeah. Well, we don't have any snow here yet. It's going to snow a little bit today, but it's been mild still. So, well, it's after our kind of customary how is your weather, which is really boring. That's how we start a conversation every time. We have a really good and interesting and exciting guest today from the United States, of all places. And we haven't had, actually, when was last time? Actually, no, last week we had also somebody from the United States. But we have an interesting guest. His name is Captain Andrei Petrov. And I say captain because he's part of the U.S. Marine Corps. And he's been in the Corps since 2010, I believe. He is an Orthodox Christian as well. He has 5 kids, which is amazing. All boys, I believe. Andrei? Yes?
Sir.
All right. And he is a one-stripe purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. Just coming slowly out of military service. After, I believe, is it 13 years?
Almost 13 years in the Corps.
In the Corps. Awesome. Yeah. And so, and you are kind of, transitioning into civilian life and also possibly into ministry, which is amazing. So, you know, we've never had, you know, a military officer, an Orthodox Christian, and somebody going into ministry. So that's like the trifecta. And very, very excited to have you here. Welcome to our podcast, Andrei.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for having me, fathers. Yeah. I asked for a blessing earlier. So, yeah. This is a great opportunity, and I got into your podcast. I've been putting it on a kind of a fire hose and really downloading some of the previous seasons, and I enjoyed it. I reached out to you, and I just wanted to share some things, because I know you have listeners that are very close to what I've been living in the last 13 years, and I think it'll be beneficial just for all of us, myself and everybody out there.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. And we've had before,
you know, a military slash priest on. Like we had, I think in the first episode, first season, we had Father Michael.
Yeah, he was in the military.
Mark Antony, yeah. And he's a priest in the States. I forget which, it's really bad. He's under the Antiochian Orthodox Church, I think, right? And he is a former, was he a former Marine as well?
I think he's under, isn't he Greek Orthodox?
Oh, sorry, he's under the Greek Orthodox, yeah. I think he's a former, I can't believe he was Marine or I can't remember which corps he was under, but he's a former Marine. And I think he was in Iraq as well. And he's also, but he was, I think he was infantry. And he's an Orthodox priest as well. So we've had a couple of guests, but never somebody kind of transitioning and going into it, like studying and training, which is, I find fascinating. So, Andre, tell us a little bit about yourself, like at least kind of like, and our listeners, you know, a little bit of your background, you know, where you grew up, you know, how you got in, you know, to the core and everything, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so just want to make sure it's not boring. Kind of let me know, because I know some of the other podcasts are like, you know, if you have some guests that I just kind of sometimes kind of scroll through the background to get to the topic, because you have a really interesting topic. I want to make sure we get to it that you called out on this. But yeah, my background, it's you know, this is late 90s, 1998. I'm 11 years old. Family from Siberia, Irkutsk, Russia. And so they brought me over here when I was a little kid. And you know, reasons for it now, it's looking back, and I'm 36 years old. It's, you know, at the time I didn't know the exact reasons, but essentially it wasn't safe for my family to be where I was. My dad was, you know, making a, you know, substantial amount of money through the business, but, you know, he brought me here and then pretty much just got involved with the American lifestyle in North Carolina. And, it's funny. I'll mention now that you priest you had from North Carolina, Antiochian priest who you went to the seminary with, it's the tie back to that. He's actually was a mentor under the priest that baptized me here in America, Father Nicholas Sorensen, All Saints in Raleigh. So priest that baptized me, his mentor, you know, the priest you went to basically seminary with, lives where I grew up in Fuqua Varina, a small area in our
country. Father James,
yes, that's correct.
Nice.
Cool. So a kind of small world, you know, Orthodox world. And
sure.
But yeah, essentially, yeah, baptized here when I was 13 years old, along with my younger sister. She's 2 years younger than me. And, you know, my dad was baptized. My mother was baptized in Russia. But, you know, they weren't at church. The catechumen process wasn't just, you know, prevalent in that time. And so, yeah, since 11 years old, I got into playing sports, you know, played soccer. In college, went to, you know, my church, and really began after my dad passed away when I was 16. And, you know, just one of those things where I started asking questions. And through philosophy, I studied philosophy at Belmont Abbey. It's a Catholic school in the, right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And, yeah, essentially got church, you know, in a row court church after my Catholic professor told me, he's like, you know, we're just going to talk about this Vatican II stuff. You being a Russian, you know, Orthodox, you know, go find a Rokor church. And essentially just told me, go read Vladimir Solovyov. And I did that. I studied philosophy, studied abroad in the old country my senior year in Siberia, in Omsk, where Dostoevsky was exiled, wrote my thesis. And, you know, from there, got back to the States, enlisted in the Marine Corps as a reservist, got my citizenship after boot camp and all that. And was able to get commissioned in 2012. And shortly after, got married. Wife is from my hometown, originally born in Kazakhstan, ethnic Russian.
Nice.
Literally after, you know, 9 months after we got married, we had our first child. Mm-hmm. And yeah, kids kept, you know, coming. In 10 years that we celebrated anniversary, 10 years of marriage, you know, we got blessed with five boys. So very thankful for that.
Wow, that's amazing. All boys.
All boys, yeah. And I mean, if you know the names. I told you the names are very, very typical. You know, we have oldest one, Sergey, St. Sergius of Rajanich, was also my dad's name. Second one is Nikolai. He's the protege, St. Nick, obviously. And third one is Vladimir, you know, St. Prince, St. Vladimir. Then we have... Alexander, he's the Hawaii baby, typical Hawaiian spirit, you know, Aloha spirit. And then the last one, Dmitri, we had here in Virginia, he's about 11 months. And so 9 and a half is the oldest, 2 years apart. And my wife got that, you know, Greek name, Dimitri. She wanted that from the first one, and she finally got it on the fifth one. Yeah, it was a Greek name. I respect the warrior saint, and you know, I know some of the Greeks. And it seems like every third one is named Dimitri or George. So, but he's also named that Saint Dimitri of Donskoy, the Russian saint. So,
nice. That's great. So big family and. Yeah, and so you did about 13 years in the Corps, you said, right?
Coming up on 13 years, yes, sir.
Yeah. Did you spend most of that time in Hawaii or other places as well?
So first duty station, I got stationed Camp Pendleton, Southern California. Mm-hmm. You know, being kind of grew up in North Carolina, rural area, went out to Southern California, eye-opening 9th Comm Battalion, so I'm a commo. Not like Jocko, not a combat vet or anything like that. You know, been to a combat zone, but, you know, just proximity to combat, nothing crazy like Jocko. But after Camp Pendleton, I was able to do 2017-18. I was in Altacatam, just west of Baghdad. And that was really just doing my job out there after the big fight in Mosul, kind of on the tail end of ISIS over there. And then got lucky, you know, called the monitors, they do distribution of orders, you know. I called them and I said, you know, I wanted orders to Hawaii because of the icon there and the church. And the monitor, basically, the person that decides where the next, duty station is going to be, told me, no way. You know, you spent almost 5 years of that time, 4.5 years at Sunny California. There's no way I'm sending you somewhere nice. And after two or three conversations, you know, I was able to get the orders to Hawaii finally. And that was the most spiritual, beneficial, you know, time, 3 years in Hawaii we spent.
Awesome.
Yeah. Obviously you guys know this, the mirror streaming icon that's there. Icon. So literally 3 years in front of the icon there. And that's when I really got into the seminary.
Awesome.
How about your jiu-jitsu training? When did you start that?
Yeah. How long this is for? And if you guys care to listen, you know, let me know. I'll make it short, but, you know, there's some funny stories. So I was 2015, and we have a dojo, you know, right where I was working at in 9th Comm, literally outside my office. So my second commanding officer, let's call him Captain P, you know, he's a little bit, you know, my age, but a little bit more senior than me, took me out. You know, we had a PT session with our unit, and, you know, him and this old crusty chief officer, let's call him, you know, Rick, they you know, we wrestled, and I thought it was athletic at the time, you know, this crusty chief officer was able to, you know, hold me out on me and then, you know, submit me, and my peer, my, you know, the guy I looked up to, my commanding officer, kind of put me in a little pretzel. So after that, I got, you know, I thought it was a warrior, you know. I was probably enlisted, I was doing a whole bunch of good pugil stick fighting and boot camp and all that, and I started asking questions, you know, what am I doing wrong? And then since it was convenient, I had a dojo literally outside my office, and it was every lunch, you know, every lunch from 11 to 1300, 1 o'clock, there's Marines rolling, you know, and the people that got me into it were, you know, my first sergeant, and there was a grappling club going on, another old lieutenant colonel, crusty lieutenant colonel, you know, we called each other by first name, Dennis at that time, and he was a Croat, and he was a Rayo in Russia. And, you know, we would train, he would teach me some stuff. You know, the first sergeant would take his time to, like, you know, show me shrimping during his off time. And then show me videos of Mendez brothers. That's what really got me into it, doing beer and bolos. And, you know, I was an athletic guy. I played soccer in college and semi-pro. And I was like, you know, what they're doing is amazing. And just show me the mastery. But then the icing on the cake, the tipping point was Tim Sledd, Professor Tim Sledd. I don't know if you guys heard who that is. He was Andre Galvao's first American black belt. And he was brought in by, you know, a mass sergeant to kind of teach the Marines, you know, do a little exhibition class. And I see this geeky guy wearing, you know, glasses, very smart. He was a professional, you know, lawyer. And he left everything he had in Indiana and basically moved in with Andre Galvao in California, you know, that he lived there. And he was doing some, you know, against big, huge, you know, I guess strong Marines. And he was just, you know, no problem, black belt, you know, rolling them up. And I started going to his academy right outside. It was Atos Oceanside. And literally just through personalities like that, through curiosity. And, you know, another curious, you know, I was smart, I was athletic, but I wasn't able to do what, you know, which you guys have probably seen talked about before, what they were doing. And Southern California, obviously, you can throw a rock and you hit a world champion there. I realized later on, so it was a great area for that to learn jiu-jitsu.
And do your children train as well?
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, as soon as they're body trained, they're on the mats. You know, yeah. The value of it realized very early on, and the academies. Tim Sledd, you know, he through military, you know, things start, you know, coming together towards deployment, you know, time, and yeah, the being exposed to violence, honed violence very early on. It's, you know, that's how warriors are made. And you know, Sparta, you guys probably know more about the Greek, you know, ancient Greek, kind of how they train warriors, but. Yeah, all that stuff. They're on the mats. They're on the mats with me constantly.
Yeah. Good. And what? So you're what are you, a purple belt now? First stripe purple belt?
Yeah, yeah. So I've been a purple belt since 2019. Yeah. I got my stripe for 9 years almost of training, and then I got it right before the lockdown over there in Hawaii. So.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I've seen those Ronin purple belts, and sadly after the lockdowns I had to become a Ronin because a lot of gyms were closed down. But right now I have a great place where I train, and yeah, I'm sticking to one academy now.
Yeah, good,
nice. Well, you know, kind of moving on to our main topic. Thank you for that, for your background. You know, you had seen before, kind of going through the old episodes, we had this really kind of, I think it was one of the most fascinating topics that we've discussed in the past. And it's something that myself and Father Thomas, we were thinking about even when we first started the podcast, you know, just about 3 years ago. We're coming up to 3 years now. And that is kind of like this idea, like even the title of our podcast, The Fighting Priest, is a little bit of a contradiction, right? Because when people hear that, they say, okay, what's that about, right? Because there is this idea in some Orthodox circles, I wouldn't say in all Orthodox circles, but in some Orthodox circles that, you know, I don't want to use the word violence necessarily, but more like combat, self-defense, martial arts. There's this idea that Orthodoxy and any type of martial arts or fighting are incompatible. And so we did two episodes in the past called Orthodoxy and Pacifism. You know, one of them was just me and Father Thomas kind of throwing out our ideas initially, you know, what we thought about it, what we've heard from people, what we heard from other priests or bishops or, you know, official statements of churches. And then the second episode, we had a really nice guy from Seattle. And he was in security, but he was also, I think he had done, I'm not sure if he had done military as well. And he was actually Roman Catholic background, Eastern Rite. And he was, we were discussing again, this kind of idea of like, you know, we were talking about blessed are the meek, you know, like what is it to be meek and what is it to be strong, but also spiritual and to have that responsibility. Right. So we thought, you know, let's do a part three today. You know, let's talk about Orthodoxy and Pacifism with you, who also kind of are straddling those two worlds, like myself and Father Thomas. Well, we straddle those two worlds as priests and also as practitioners of jiu-jitsu. But you kind of straddle those two worlds in three ways, you know, military and maybe future priesthood and, you know, jiu-jitsu, right? So, you know, I'd love to get your insight on this, you know, like, you know, maybe start with your initial thoughts about it. Have you been thinking about this? Have you run into it in your personal life?
Yeah, no. Fathers, I listened to both of those podcasts yesterday, and you guys are actually spot on. So there's several things in there. You know, I'll start with the guest that you had in the second podcast there, the gentleman from Seattle, I believe. And he uses jiu-jitsu in his, you know, more so than I do as a communications officer in the Marine Corps. You know, I'm not a combat MOS, but he mentioned threshold violence. You know, we call it escalation force, you know, deploy environment. That's spot on. What he said about that, people that are trained in jiu-jitsu, Jocko talks about all the time, people that are trained, they know what the threshold of people that are not trained, they're easily disbalanced and they don't know how to react to violence. Father Ted, I think your metaphor, or basically the pastor and the sheep is also one of those things that from the first day as a young Lance Corporal, my second commanding officer, you know, I remember to this day, He said, yeah, it's, you know, when the sheep need protection from the wolves, you know, they either call, you know, a sheepdog or the shepherd that needs to be accustomed to violence. And that's from the first day, you know, me being not as Orthodox as I am now, and you able to come to that as a pastor, father, that is essentially what it comes down to, you know, being able to recognize and protect your sheep, you know, in the instances that you talked about on those two podcasts, you know, where, you know, were you protecting your wife, your home? But really the bottom line, you know, I was actually reading right before this is John chapter 15, verse 13, I believe. It's essentially, you know, once you are engaged in battle with, you know, with armies, it's essentially, you know, your love for camaraderie for the people to the left and right of you, you know, that you mm-hmm. give up your life. That's what it comes down to, once, you know, on tactical level, once things around the range.
Yeah. I remember in the first podcast, we had read this like kind of like statement from one of the metropolises in Greece, which was kind of like, again, not to criticize the metropolis of that specific diocese or whatever within the country of Greece or the people who wrote it. But it was a fairly, can I use the word ignorant? statement about jujitsu, because, you know, obviously whoever wrote it, whatever priest was making that press release, and this is like probably 20 years ago, right? Jujitsu was becoming popular. They were trying to teach it in like high schools in Greece as part of the phys ed, you know, physical education. And they were like, oh no, this is like Far Eastern religion stuff. You know, they're probably thinking of like, you know, Kung Fu and Chi and all this kind of stuff, right? And, you know, this is not compatible with our lifestyle, and this is like violent, and, you know, we're teaching people to hurt people and all this kind of stuff. And when you bring up the metaphor of the good shepherd, right? I was recently thinking about, I saw this really, did you see the movie, Man of God, about St. Nectarios, that was kind of like limited release across?
So I heard of that. Met Paul Jonah, who on Confess recommended. I haven't able to find it yet, but yeah, I heard
about it. Well, now it's free on YouTube.
Okay.
So you guys, watch it. It was made by a Serbian Orthodox director, female director, mostly Greek cast. It's in English, right? It's really good. It's about the life of St. Nectarios, right, who was persecuted by the church during his time, right, from Egypt to Greece. And, you know, he was a very, very popular saint, not just amongst the Greeks, but amongst a lot of other Orthodox jurisdictions. And I remember from his life, from his bio, that, you know, he had a female monastery in Aegina, which is like a northern island of Greece. And I remember when he was persecuted in his life, he basically just took it, turned the other cheek, you know, never raised a hand, never defended himself, right? He was humble enough to kind of accept whatever slander and whatever things what came his way. When they attacked his monastery with slander and with different things and whatever, because it was a female monastery, there was innuendos, all this kind of stuff, they're trying to destroy his monastery, he fought back, right, in various ways. And so one of his students, like in the movie, it's depicted really nicely. One of the students says, well, you know, I don't understand. It's like, you know, all these years, they deposed you, they kicked you out, they chased you all over the world, all this kind of stuff, and you never said anything. But now when they come after the monastery, you're willing to go against the Holy Synod and you're willing to go against, like, you know, the hierarchy. And he goes, this is how it is in the faith, he says, right? When people attack you personally, like, you're only responsible for yourself, you can turn the other cheek. But when people attack your children, you fight, right? And that stood out to me when I was watching that like a couple months ago. I'm like, oh, you know, that's an interesting take on it. Like, you know, when he can make a choice to sacrifice himself if he wants, but not others.
Yeah, I know that's a great thought. Now, I actually, I'm going to write that down. Father Thomas mentioned some really interesting points I really want to bring out. And this kind of goes to kind of like, you know, for me to transition, because I've been living inside a gated, you know, military community for the last 12 years. So as I'm trying to see what's going on the outside of that community, reading history helps. And Father Thomas mentioned essentially some of the Protestant kind of pacifist, you know, sects after, I guess, the Woodstock, you know, those kind of hippie kind of movements. And, yeah. And I want to kind of give you guys this image that I recently had last year. So I attend as EWS resident here in Quantico. And so we do these, what they call kind of like walking through, you know, battlefields. So this was Antietam, Civil War site of Antietam. It's the deadliest one day in America, where over 22,000 Union and Confederate soldiers died. So on this battlefield, there's this church, and this church is called Duncan Church. So it was a pacifist sect, you know, either German or Dutch. So, you know, when I was doing a presentation there, I made this smart comment. I don't think not everybody picked up on it. Well, they're pacifists because they were dunking their, when they were baptizing three times, you know, because not everybody does that in Protestant. Were they viewed as sectarians because they were pacifists and then everybody was fighting during the Civil War and they were not, you know. So I think part of that is transferring to the culture that I'm getting ready to transition to, that essentially I'll be an outlier. You know, I know I'm an outlier. You know, most Marines are. We're brainwashed very heavily. You know, we drink the Kool-Aid for very long. And, you know, once, you know, I had my philosophy degree before I started getting brainwashed at Paris Island, but it is heavy. And it's also good. You know, if you start, cause I came from, you know, Catholic, kind of college background, and then I know what virtue is and I know what Marine Corps core values are. There's some intersection there. And then, you know, we have a cult of our own saints, you know, in the military. And, but it's very, those things transfer. And I'm just kind of curious, kind of want to open up towards that, you know, really the, it's basically not the warrior ethos is not valued in Western society that's been used to comfort. And a lot of it is spot on. You guys mentioned, if you probably know more history of how, you know, American religious landscape between the Puritans, between the Quakers, you know, William Penn and all those, you know, kind of roads, which is much different when you go to the old country like Greece or Russia, you know, the Balkan states were constantly fighting. So it's an interesting topic to discuss.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially now. Like, there used to be more of like, you see it as well, you're not a veteran yet, right? But even being in the military, I'm sure you can see it even in American society, although I think the Americans are still much more respectful of their military, generally speaking, across the board. You might disagree, I don't know. From what we see as Canadians, right? Canadians are very lukewarm, you know, with their military, right? So, you know, you don't have the phenomenon in Canada where Canadians will see a military officer and they'll say, like, thank you for your service, or even just be respectful and say hello. Like, generally speaking, from what I experience, like, here, like in Toronto, for example, you see military people around, nobody says anything to anybody, right? It's just they're ignored. It's kind of like the Canadian culture is very more pacifist. It's almost like we don't even know that there's a military. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, you know. You know, but I know Father Thomas has thoughts about this, and that's why.
Well, yeah, it's also like from my current understanding of, I guess, white Canadian history, the way Canada exists now is essentially the result of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, right? Because he's the one who dismantled the Canadian military. So I think before that, the military was looked at more like the way you'd look at American military or British military. And also, he brought in multiculturalism as official position of the country, right? So you have conflicting values. Anyway, go. And then in the West here in Canada, it's completely different than Eastern Canada. It's like, it's almost like it's two different countries. Well, then Quebec as well. So it's not like this cohesive thing where people set apart their differences for the common values of, you know, American freedom and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We don't have that type of viewpoint, right?
Yeah.
So you see with the older generation, like I mentioned, like my grandfather-in-law who just passed away 2 weeks ago, he was a vet. So you see that generation, they'll, like, Remembrance Day, November 11th, has all this meanings to them and everything like that. But at the Battle of Vimy Ridge, like certain things like that to my generation from the 80s, there's no connection to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not like there's not, like, Canadian military is obviously involved everywhere along with American military, right? Indeed, and many times they're working in tandem, right? Like, so not all places, but most places where you have major conflicts in the world, right, where the U.S. military is there, you usually find Canadian forces as well, right? You know, to a much smaller degree, of course, okay? But they're there. But we're not educated on it. So there's no, it's not as it's not in the public sphere or in the public consciousness as much as it is where I noticed, for example, I lived in New York, let's say Vladimir, for 2 years. It's a different culture altogether, right? It doesn't matter whether you're left or right, Democrat, Republican, whatever, most people would kind of stop and honor the military, right? Kind of like a unifying, part of the unifying identity of being American, right? So there is this kind of respect, right? Interestingly enough, I also find that there is a waning kind of respect for clergy as well. It might be for different reasons.
In Canada or the States?
Generally speaking, but more so in Canada. I find like, and I don't mean like amongst only like Orthodox, like, so okay, Orthodox within the Orthodox community, they tend to respect their clergy and things like that, right? But this kind of idea of clergy. So like in the States, it doesn't matter if they know you're Orthodox or not. If they see priests, like, you know, it can be a Protestant, it can be a Catholic, they'll say, oh, good morning, Father, right? Canada, nobody acknowledges. I find like in the general population, if I'm like, in a store or if I'm driving down the street or a police officer, let's say, sees me, nobody says, nobody even knows what Father is here. They can see a collar, they don't know what it is. Or they don't, or they pretend it doesn't exist. In Calgary, it might be different. You're Western Canada, right? So it's like the Texas of the North, right?
Yeah.
But
people call me Father, yeah.
Yeah.
In Alberta, definitely people call me Father, even people I don't know, and they stop here, you and talk to you.
Yeah. Here, nobody talks to you. Nobody acknowledges you. Nobody knows who you are. They don't know whether you're a Muslim or a Christian or whatever. They're just, the culture is completely different. Like the identification, these kind of public icons of like what we would identify as clergy, what we would identify as military, what we identify, you know, I find that it's much more subdued in Canada than it is in the United States.
Yeah, I think also part of the military aspect, like I remember when I was growing up in school, when it came to the military, like going after, you know, after Trudeau's senior's time, we always taught that Canada is like a peacekeeping military. And it was like this, looking back as an adult, it's like propaganda, right? This push, this new narrative of the military that it's peacekeeping. Like, you know, those Canadian heritage moments you grew up watching, or you sometimes see people make memes out of them now, but it was this peacekeeping thing. And I don't see that anymore. I see this culture of ours, right? Like most people are pacifists. Like I think I said in the other podcast, like if you're a pacifist, you still have someone else fighting for you. So it's like, you're not really a pacifist.
It's ironic. Yeah.
You're just sitting out, especially like, yeah, because in Canada we have a lot of Mennonites, like I said, all those like Anabaptist groups that came here from Russia or who broke away from the Amish, like all that type of stuff. They're all, what do they call it, like conscientious objectors? Wasn't that what they were called in the Vietnam War and stuff like that? But so yeah, you're not killing people, but maybe you're making bullets or being nerds or something. So it's kind of hard to escape the effects or participation in some way. So it's like, at what point, how vocal do you want to be? I just think it's weird in Canadian culture how like people on Remembrance Day will be all like 2 minutes of silence, you know, do the cannons or whatever they do. And then after that, it's like they don't care about the military or they're vocally opposed to it.
Do you guys have conscientious objectors in the Marines, Andre?
Yeah, so that's a topic that's a little bit probably for the time when I transitioned to the civilian world, which, you know, a year and a half
ago. All right. No problem. Yeah.
There was a precedent, obviously, with the jabs and stuff like that. But it's one of those things, once you're indoctrinated, once you've gone through the boot camp, it's one of those things where kind of like the Godfather movie, you know, as much as you want to get in, it's hard. It pulls you right back in. So, because you are committed to the people, commodities, esprit de corps, we'll call it, to the people of Latin America, and people that get this disgruntled, you know, there's plenty of things, you know, I'm not gonna bite the hand that feeds me, but there's plenty of Marines that get disgruntled, you know, due to various reasons, but those are not the majority. But I want to kind of go on the tangent, because this is the topic you discussed. It's you know, obviously, it's a little bit farther away than what, you know, I've been able to or exposed to. I will be, you know, exposed to this sooner or later, but I want to kind of give it, I think you guys touched on this briefly in the last couple of podcasts, but the part of my background is that, you know, I was raised in the 90s in the Soviet Union, kind of broke up, and I grew up doing martial arts, but, you know, kind of like Taekwondo, Wusu, like this Chinese martial arts. And I want to relate this to Sambo. You know, you have two founders of Sambo. You had Viktor Spiridonov, who kind of put the Central Asian, you know, indigenous wrestling styles into, like, you know, the system that we have now in Sambo. But then there was Vasily Ashepkov. If you're familiar with his judo background, he's one of the first, you know, Westerners to go to the judo academy there. But most, I don't know if this is taught in the Orthodox, you know, background that you were raised. He was part of the mission of Saint Nicholas of Japan, Saint Nicholas Kosatkin.
Oh wow!
So yeah, so if it's a great story. So essentially, he was, you know, almost like this orphan kid, in a mission. You know, came from the Far East, you know, like Kamchatka, I believe, somewhere. And yeah, because they didn't have like a physical training, you know, for this mission there, a Russian mission right around the 1904 war with Japan. They picked out a very athletic kid, you know, so the kid was like kind of from the streets, you know, grew up, you know, Vasily Ashepkov. He got inducted into the judo academy there in Tokyo, and he finished it.
Wow.
He took that skill back to what was then, you know, the after the revolution, you know, the Soviet Union. So essentially him and Viktor Spiridonov implemented Sambo, but essentially it's, you know, what he learned from judo into the NKVD and the martial kind of law that they had there, and the secret police, the military police, there's videos of him, you can watch videos of him using real, you know, judo throws, you know, pain compliance, things like that. But the sad story is, you know, as much as he knew, and he knew how to protect himself, he's, you know, modern day one of a black belt jiu-jitsu judo, he was choked to death in a prison. You know, people were very jealous of his knowledge, you know, and he was put in a situation where there's multiple aggressors, and he was, you know, he was pretty much, you know, he was suffocated, but they said it was a heart attack, you know, but there was a little bit of competition between the schools that formed in Sambo at that time. But the point I'm trying to make is that the school that I grew up in, the martial arts school, was actually, in the late 80s, it was illegal for the founder to have do martial arts in late communist Russia, all the way to like the late 80s. And the reason I say that, you know, obviously Canada is a commonwealth with Britain and Australia. And, you know, you guys know more than I do, but once, you know, the pendulum swings, you know, in the West, you know, you see that in the Soviet Union, you know, as Metropolitan Journal says, it's very hard to tell the American public that in some ways Russia, you know, is a little bit ahead because of the communist experience. But essentially, you know, we've seen this once they try to close down our churches, you know, in the last year and a half. You've seen the rights they can take away. But yeah, all the way. So basically, to have this martial arts school that I was in doing Taekwondo in the early 90s is that they had to basically camouflage that under like almost kind of like boy scouting kind of techniques. But they were teaching, you know, martial art. So essentially, in a communist Russia, only the you know, people that lived in the area, probably older than me, can speak much better to that. But, you know, FSB, you know, KGB at that time, most law enforcement or military, they're the ones that trained Sambo. And this was, you know, due to the analysis and compilation of Vasily Ashepkov through judo and Viktor Spiridonov through the Central Asian, you know, techniques they put together. So, yeah, they don't want martial art culture to be prevalent in the society, in the peaceful society, because of that. Because, you know, my 7-year-old wants a knife, you know, because we live in a neighborhood community and there's other older boys. I can't give him a knife. He doesn't know how to use a knife. And, you know, he goes outside, you know, other parents are going to say he's a knife. So it's a weapon, you know, martial art is a weapon. You give that weapon to somebody who's not ready for it. They can organize, you know, revolutionary groups and things like that. And your government is not stable. So it's a way to subdue the public, you know, subdue it with multiple, you know, philosophies, you know, kind of, false religions and false kind of teaching. So, but yeah, people that learned it, they took it back and they, you know, they used it, they passed it on, but at the same time, it didn't help them. Once you're in a prison situation, you're not gonna get saved by it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think this goes back to what Father Thomas mentioned in the previous podcast, basically saying that you have Saint Seraphim of Sarov and then your example of Saint Constantine. So yeah, you know, I kind of leave it at that because I remember that that's a very good example of two different extremes.
Yeah.
Or even like my saint, my church, Saint Demetrios, right? I used to teach that in my Sunday school class when pacifism came up and stuff like that. You have Saint Demetrios who's in jail and he blesses Nestor to go fight Laios. right in the stadium, and it's fighting to the death, right, with the platform and the spikes and everything. So I think even in St. Demetrios in Toronto, they have on the wall there, they have a big icon of St. Demetrios to the bars blessing him before he goes, right?
Yeah, it's well, this is, you know, Orthodoxy. This is why Orthodoxy is so diverse, right? Because you have not just one type of saint, you have multiple types, styles, and we recognize sanctity in all different lifestyles, including military, right? And so there's not just one monolithic kind of idea of what I think in our modern times, especially if we're influenced in certain societies by pacifism, we have this idea of the saint who's kind of more like the monastic saint, right? Like peaceful, prayerful, you know, Jesus prayer, monastery, that's it, right? And we neglect all the other saints that exist in the history of the church, you know, healers, right? Holy and mercenary healers, you know, bishops, you know, teachers, all these different types who were not all necessarily peaceful in the sense that they weren't, you know, stoic or quiet about what they did, right? Like look at a lot of the fathers, especially like if you look at the Cappadocian fathers, right? Like a lot of polemic in the first 5, 6, 7 centuries, you know, of the church. A lot of the fathers of the church were saints, did not write in a very nice way, at least against heretics and against adversaries of the faith, right? Sometimes they were downright nasty, right? So, but they're still considered saints of the church.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.